If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
We are live with a completely unnecessary podcast for Thursday, November 20th, 2013, alongside burrito-churning Ian Ferguson.
How do you do?
I am Pat Contry. We are your hosts for the evening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why I turned the easy listening host Pat right there.
I don't know.
But coming up on the show tonight, we're going to be discussing a few things. The Xbox One release is imminent! On the cusp, if you will. We'll be discussing what that means and what the early word is from the early reviews. We're going to discuss our favorite beat-em-ups of all time.
Yay.
For the retro gaming discussion. We're also going to discuss a Magic card selling for a record like $27,000 or $29,000. We'll discuss that. And your Q&A. Your Q&A using a hashtag CUPodcast on Twitter. We're going to answer your questions at the end of the show. So, Ian, how have you been? What have you been up to? I know you've been away and you're back.
I was out of town for my brother's wedding.
Congratulations to your brother.
That was fantastic.
Matrimony's great.
And yesterday I spent an exorbitant amount of money on records and used books and then felt bad about it. And
why'd you feel bad? Were they naughty books, Ian?
No, they weren't this time.
That would have been fun.
Yeah, it would have been better. And then, now I'm back to work, and now I'm drinking a beer with you. So I'm immediately transported from this lovely land of happiness, and now I'm just back in this hole of shit. So let's get on the way with our podcast.
Well, that was overly confrontational and unexpected.
Yeah.
Well, how's my life been, Ian? I'm glad you asked. My life's been very busy lately.
Been reading those fuck books.
What the hell's wrong with you?
You're reading that porn.
Well, you don't read. Who reads porn anyway? Really? You just watch it for free. But anyway, so what I've been doing, I've been pre-planning my Pat the NES Punk Volume 3 DVD. Speaking of DVDs, Video Game Year's DVD's out with our hilarious commentary, which is really the seller, me, you, and that guy named Rue.
My name's on it.
If my parents
knew about it, they would probably be proud of
it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I should turn my phone off in case someone decides to. Anyway, so that's out, but I'm pre-planning Volume 3 of Pat the NES Punk. It'll probably be another 6 hours of glorious content, and I'll probably starting the pre-order campaign like I did last year, like a day or two before Thanksgiving. Not the best timing, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to try and have it done for MAGFest, which again, me and Ian, we're going to be at MAGFest. It's going to be a nice soiree of 4 days of fun, pinball gaming fun, and games and stuff. And
it'll be fun. I was thinking about making a bunch of little pins. To give out to people who find me.
Are you serious?
Because I'm going to
You really should that.
I'm going do to that. Do my best to hide. So if you find me,
you should,
and I'm productive enough, I'm going to make a bunch of little pins that I can hand
well,
out.
Say like, I found Ian, have your face on it.
I was thinking I might do a variety. I was thinking Ian's Taco Club with like a little taco.
With your face on it, though. Your face is going to be like...
I don't know that I'm going to put my face on anything.
Well, yes, you have to.
I was thinking about doing a small set of collectible bins.
You really should. Do a small, limited run.
A
manifest exclusive run of Ian pins.
I expect them to all be graded and flipped within a year for thousands.
They'll be on eBay that day.
Yeah.
It'll be like Comic-Con. The next day, the LEGO exclusive figures are online. You got to do it. They're cheap to do those pins. You got to do it.
I'm going to help people make a lot of money off of mine.
I'll be doing the sweat wristbands.
Yeah.
I'll be doing that for MAGFest and the DVD. I'm not sure people will buy them, but I'm getting a deal on them, so why not?
Neat.
So, yeah. What else is going on? I went to Qualcomm today. There's a new swap meet. A new swap meet's like almost like not a blind date. It's like a date that you're told about how she kind of looks and what but it's still semi-blind. So you're kind of excited. You don't know what to expect, but you don't get your hopes up, or you shouldn't if you've ever been on a blind date. And it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. You know, when I end up getting, like, dental picks for my teeth, you know, you're forced
to buy that's kind of weird. I think that's serial killer behavior.
What's that serial killer behavior? You know, it says not for medical use on it. I'm not sure what else you'd use it for besides a hobby.
Serial killing.
I'm not a serial killer, Ian.
I'm not dead yet, so you make a good point.
You've survived through. So let's talk about new systems. We're in the next gen officially. I saw a 360 today at the flea market. I said, that's old gen.
I've had to explain. So I had a really nice customer come in today. Older guy, right? I would put him in his late 50s. He's like, you know, I've been playing my Xbox for a long time. He's like, I really like these games. I'm thinking about getting something with better graphics. He's like, you know, I'm looking at an Xbox 360 or PS3. And I just realized today that as I'm trying to explain, because he asked about the Xbox One and the PS4 as well. As I'm trying to explain to him what would be the pros and cons of, you know, staying with, well, the past generation or going with the new generation, that I had to start referring to PS3 and Xbox 360 as last generation. It was the first time, because I was gone all last week, it was the first time since I've started working that I now officially have to refer to the PlayStation 3 as a last gen system. And,
wow, it's like you've been through a time warp.
Yeah,
going home to Buffalo.
Right, it's ridiculous. But yeah, so you know the initial word out on the PlayStation 4 seems to be much of what I expected it to be. It's another video game system, and people seem to be enjoying their PlayStation 4s. But it, you know, it doesn't seem to be shaking anything up too much.
No.
Of all the launch games that came out, the only one that interests me. It's funny because I bought both my PS3 and my 360 for a download title. But I really want to play Resogun on the PS4. It looks fantastic. It's made by the same people who did...
What is Resogun?
It's... Okay, so it's sort of like Defender on a cylinder. But everything is made up... I believe everything is made up of voxels. Everything is individually rendered. So when things explode, everything has a very unique look to it. But it's made by the same people who made Super Stardust HD, if I'm not mistaken, Housemarque. And I really loved Super Stardust HD, and this game looks just as fun. It's an arcade game at the base core of it, and 5 years ago, I would have bought a system near launch. 10 years ago, I would have bought a system near launch for an arcade game, but I'm not repeating the buy a 360 for Pac-Man Championship Edition. Again, I need something more substantial than Resogun before I get my PS4. But the Xbox One initial impressions are interesting. And...
Well, they're trying. That's the thing. The PS4 is almost like the Super PS3, right? It's just you're getting in theory better graphics. The controller is almost exactly the same. You have a little touch pad on it.
Sure, there's that analogy. Know. It's like the Nintendo to the Super. You know, you're getting a slightly better graphics.
And I've argued before that hell. I was at E3, I couldn't tell the difference between the next gen and current gen games.
I can when I look at some a little bit deeper, but it's not a big enough jump to get me super excited.
It's not even the jump from DVD to Blu-ray where it's like, yeah, you'll notice it. I don't think it's even that big a jump. It's like a super DVD from DVD, you know? It's like, oh, we'll give you 25% better resolution. Well, can I really tell on most things? No, but it's there. Like, Killer Instinct, no, you won't notice that it could have been a 360 game, you know? But anyway... So that's the thing. Sony's playing it safe, and that's going to work. From they're going to have their core audience, and they're probably going to have their new audience or new consumers, I should say, that are pissed off about what Xbox One was trying earlier in the year with the DRM and the used game bullshit that they were trying.
Kinect
spying on you in your underwear. You know they might shift. Not saying a lot of people, but like 10% even. If they lose 10% of sales, that's huge. You know, going over to Sony.
Nope, lost it.
Oh, great. Come on, momentum. But the Xbox One's trying something different. They are honestly trying to do something, and they want to be the entire media center. They want to be the media center. They want to actually literally control your living room. So, for example, there was a great Kotaku, really in-depth review about all the stuff that's on the system. And it's really telling about this, how the Xbox One is sort of placing itself in the market, because 80% of it has nothing to do with games.
Right.
So basically, what you first need to know is that there's an HDMI input.
Right.
To put your cable to connect. You're putting your cable not to your TV. You don't have to. You can put your cable box into the Xbox One, which will then go to your TV. They literally want your Xbox One to be the command structure, the HAL, if you will, of your living room. So that there's voice commands to turn on. It's basically using your Xbox One as a universal remote, which is interesting. But I don't know if anyone ever asked for that. That's what's interesting about that whole approach.
My initial thoughts on it, and you know, I read a couple of the reviews and impressions of the Kotaku one included in some other sites. I didn't ask for it, and I don't know how much I would use it. I love some new technology, and I hate others. I don't like voice commands. I don't like hand-waving. I wouldn't want any of that. And from what I've read, if you forego the voice commands for a lot of things on the Xbox One, the button presses to achieve the same thing are a bit more complex than they really need to be because so much focus was put on the voice. And that would probably drive me nuts after not very long, especially if the voice recognition or the camera wasn't spot on 100%. If I pick up a remote, provided that the batteries are fresh in it, and I press a button to change the channel or lower the volume, it does it. If I'm yelling at something and it's not working, I'm just going to resort to the old methods, and none of this new stuff would mean anything to me. So I actually will say that I applaud Microsoft for trying something that's neat like that, and for some people, that's going to be a big seller for them. People who love the new technology, and they like that idea, but it just sounds awful to me. I don't even know that I'd even attempt to use it.
But where did that come from? Did it come from the fact that, as we said before, and this goes back to, was this new generation necessary this year? Which I would argue, no. It could have waited a year or two.
Sure.
Not for Nintendo. They needed to upgrade the graphics. But for Sony and Microsoft, probably not. Is this the last hurrah when we have to now evolve from being, since we know that it's diminishing returns for graphics, which it is at this point, do we have to add shit that you might not even wanted? Like the voice commands, having it turn on your entire living room entertainment center, having now, we'll get into it, the snap command where you can multitask somehow while playing your game, you can snap and watch the internet or your TV on the side, like the total ADD sort of appeal.
Right, and my response to that is very neat, but why? I mean, so when you look at someone who's going to do a business pitch, you know, when they talk to you about business pitches, they tell you, make sure you have an answer for why you're creating or offering the service that you're making. There has to be a need for it in order for it to succeed. So if someone's inventing something, there has to be a need. They can't just be, I can make this thing that's very cool, because people won't buy it if there's no need for it. So people, I don't know. I mean, did they really do some focus testing? I mean, and people are like, I want to be able to turn on my TV and change channels with my voice. Or did they just add it because it looked cool and it's going to appeal to early adopters? Because
will it appeal to early adopters?
Well, much like Wii's motion controls, as time went on, people cared less and less about it. It was neat and fresh at the beginning, but as time went on, people just looked at it as the gimmick that it kind of was. Now, it's here to a degree that's always going to stay, but the actual heavy flailing motion controls phased out. So I feel like this whole voice control command center, you know, enterprise setup where you're commanding things with your voice and your hand motions, I have a feeling as time goes on, there's going to be a far less emphasis placed on it.
Well, I think it's interesting because when you look at it, cable TV and TV in general is dying with younger people in general. With the advent of
are they fighting? Yes, they're fighting. Side?
It's a giant war. It's kind of like Skynet. TV's awful. Like Skynet. Right. But anyway, so with the advent, not just the internet, Netflix is huge. I talk to more and more people that say, I don't have TV anymore. Or I don't have cable, at least. I just have Netflix and or Hulu. And that's 95% of stuff I want to watch. Yeah. And then you can go online and watch The Daily Show or South Park the next day. So it's not like, you know what I mean? It's not like you couldn't find avenues to watch it. Not even going the illegal route anymore. Like before, even for 3-4 years ago, before like The Daily Show would put everything online, for example, all their episodes, you know, you could probably find torrents that. Or the Burn Notice episode that I missed in season 2. And now they put them on the website because they get the ad review from that too. They realize that's important.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're at the point where...
Does cable even really matter? I see where you're going with this, and that's a good point.
And if this is a big part of the Xbox One to incorporate with your cable TV, it's almost like, not that it's a waste, but I think they're just flailing around trying to find something different and unique in order to have it stand out.
Right.
And in the Kotaku article, their main point was the hardware is in place, but the software isn't necessarily there yet. Like, the stuff functions, but it doesn't work the way it should easily.
Sure.
And I understand they're rushing up for Christmas and to compete with the PS4, but how much was this because of the big turnaround with the DRM? How much was that interference from that, or else it was just them rushing it out for Christmas? I wonder.
One knows, but I mean, I do seem to remember talk back at E3 even that the one was not as far along as Microsoft wanted you to believe it was.
So then it's just that they're just behind the development.
Yes. So I always say this is a curse, whether it's with video games, the pinball machine, because they can operate on the same principles, or systems firmware. It's great that things can be updated, but I really dislike the whole releasing it before it's ready thing and then patching it as they go along.
And that's what's happening.
And I'm sure the Xbox One will get a lot of these issues sorted out, but if the problems aren't... And I don't know that they're going to be enough to make anyone regret they purchased one, but it's a shame that people who are getting one aren't going to have it the way it should be out of the box because they felt the need... Well, because everyone felt the need to rush the next generation sure. a year early.
Well, for $600, it better damn well be whatever.
Five.
Okay, are you going to buy an extra controller?
No, I'm not, but that's...
60. If you were,
yeah.
Yeah, $500. Sure. $600.
I'm
okay,
just saying, let's be accurate with our numbers.
$600. $800. The point is, you're spending that. You're spending half a grand plus tax on a system that's not ready to go. In the article here, simple things. We're talking like literally the stuff my universal remote does, you know. That it's like, if you say Xbox One, you walk in, you say, or Xbox On, or whatever. Xbox On. Turns your TV on, turns your Xbox on. That's great. But if you're already watching TV, and you say Xbox On, your Xbox goes on, TV goes off. So it's not smart enough, it's like a universal remote. The universal remotes, most of them aren't smart enough to know if the TV's on or not. It's just a macro set of commands.
Sure.
It does, do this, turn this on, turn this on, turn this on. So if they can't figure that out, and that's a selling point, and it's not ready to go, that to me is a simple thing. You know, that's just like, okay then, it's functions, but it doesn't work. You know what I mean? It's not workable 100% of the time. Why is it even included?
Yeah.
You know, what are they doing? Don't even include it until you have it working correctly. Like, bring it out a month later. There's this, like the Snap 2 commands, like I mentioned before, where you can play your game, and for some reason you want to watch TV in the same corner, or bring up a website for whatever reason. That's not totally working correctly. It doesn't work. Certain websites don't display right. That's not working correctly. The voice commands are glitchy. The biggest fault that was brought up, which can be extremely dangerous and funny if you have a roommate or a friend, you can switch games automatically with the voice command.
And it won't save your progress.
And it won't warn you. It won't say, like, are you sure you want to end your game in the middle of it? You can just switch out.
Well, they did say there was an update going up on Friday before the system's launch, and I guarantee you that is going to be something that gets immediately patched.
But why does it even have to get to that point?
Well, why did it have to be patched? Another thing is you can't look at your overall... And I feel like on current systems, they bury this too far, but I'm constantly wanting to check the amount of space I have left on my hard drive.
Yes, I was going
to
bring that up.
And there is, as of right now, there is no way to check your overall storage usage on the Xbox One.
How is that even an oversight? That's like the most... What does it take you, a minute to program that in? Display hard drive space. It's a computer, for God's sake. Any computer, you can see your hard drive space. Like, what's going on?
I feel like there are people right now just stuffing these things into boxes, like taping them shut three or four times and sending them out the door like they're that far behind. You know, beads of sweat, just, you know, the size of an apple falling off of people's heads. I don't know. I mean... I actually feel, as time goes on, I actually feel less harsh about the Xbox One, only because, I don't know, because I don't have the energy to get this...
You feel sorry for the Xbox One? I kind of feel sorry.
To a degree, but I just don't have a lot of energy to get worked up about bullshit like this anymore. But I still find it insane that some of this stuff just isn't implemented right now.
But you still got to
review units.
But I'm always up on at least some sort of consumer advocacy, which is why...
Oh, yes, yes, me too.
Which is why when people went at me for, why do you care that DR... It's like, you fucking asshole. I'm trying to defend your rights
yeah.
and speak up for it, and you're saying, why do we need... so what? The Kinect's recording me and we can sell the data. You're on Facebook. Or they're trying to make like this sort of like parallel doesn't exist.
You don't worry about teenagers who are angry because you insulted their...
But I mean, that's why I get worked up on it, because people are shelling out $600 with a controller. They couldn't have, at least Wii U had backwards compatible controllers. They're shelling out $600 after tax and the extra controller for a system that doesn't have bare bones functions that it should.
Right.
That it's advertised to be an all-in-one media center that has problems with that too. And plus it's built upon basically Windows 8, which everyone hates. So you have that going on. You have a universal remote function that doesn't function 100%. You have the Snap 2 function that doesn't function 100%. And you have a funky-ass voice command system that's inaccurate. In the Kotaku review, it was funny because he said you needed, like, an Xbox One voice to understand it.
Yeah.
So you had to be like, change your voice to Xbox One.
Well, what, immediately, yeah. What immediately popped into my head was when I would play games like Seaman on the Dreamcast, and you had to talk in a very deliberate tone, you know, to make sure something would work. And I feel like we're still not necessarily past that point.
So basically, the Siri works better on your phone. Like that, you don't have to change your voice that much, really.
I've never talked to Siri. I don't.
You're not friends with your Siri?
I have a 4.
Ooh, you're not as good as me.
Yeah, I you're not as don't cool. care.
You're not as hip.
No.
But so that's where we're at. And so the games come in like way behind. That's what's so great about this. The PS4 is like, well, we're just a gaming console for the most part.
Yeah.
You have the PS3, you know what to expect. But with the Xbox, they're trying to throw so many new things in there that the gaming's secondary now with this release. And what release titles do we have? We have a few big release titles that you know about.
The exclusives would be Rise, which I don't care about. That looks pretty bad.
So you're a Roman Legion, you're a Centurion or whatever.
Cool idea, because it's not something that gets tackled a lot in games, but it looks like a very context-heavy game, which...
A lot of quickie time event stuff going on. And
quickie time?
Quickie time. That's why I just coined that. Quickie time. It's very quickie time-ish.
Yeah. A lot of that sort of thing. And then... Forza 5, which by all accounts is probably going to be fantastic if that's your thing, but I'm not into racing simulators. It does. It really does.
But I'm not a fan. Well, I'm not a fan of third person hack and slashes. Anyway, to me, there's just
so
redundant.
We're talking about Forza 5, which is not a third person.
Oh, I was talking about Rise still. Did I totally forget you're talking about Forza?
Yeah.
Oh,
you actually said it. You actually said the words Forza came out of your mouth, and then you said you don't like third person hack and slashes.
Well, in Forza, so, why are they doing that in Forza then? Why are you hacking?
Doesn't make any sense. I thought this was a game about racing cars. Forza 5, probably great if that's what you're into, but I don't like driving simulators. And then the third one, I never played anything in the series. Some people seem to think it's okay. I don't like the switch from comedic to more gritty necessarily, but Dead Rising 3.
It's a zombie game.
And it's Capcom, and I've kind of lost all my faith in Capcom long ago.
So the first couple, what, you're in a mall killing zombies with like...
First one you're in a mall, the second one you're not in a mall, and the third one you're
the first
just
one,
some sand.
The first one to me was State of Emergency. That's what the first game was. Remember State of Emergency?
I do, but I think you're off your mark on that one.
Well, you're in a mall, and you're just beating up random people and killing them.
There's lots of missions.
You like State of Emergency, really?
No, I never played State of Emergency. I'm talking...
So, okay.
Stay on topic.
So, you have three...
Exclusives.
And people get on Nintendo for not having a lot of exclusives coming out or a lot of launch titles that are worth getting. But you have these three games coming out on a system that was not ready to go, obviously. That probably needed a few more months of development on the software side. You know, and could be more underpowered than the system that's selling for $100 less. That's not a good place for Xbox to be. I'm just saying. I don't have a horse in the race. I'm just saying it's not a good place.
No, neither do I. I mean, at least not right now. I've made it clear on the podcast a few times that probably at some point next year I'll get a PS4. But
I'm definitely not getting an Xbox. If I get a PS4 or Xbox One, it's not going to be an Xbox. I know that.
PS4's launch lineup, as I mentioned earlier, isn't particularly astounding. I don't think any of the exclusives are all that phenomenal looking. But... I guess if you just want your system to... I still think it's slightly the more attractive option being $100 less and just being more focused on gaming.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing. If what you want is something that's all-in-one, that's really doing everything, you've already figured out how to work your gaming computer into your TV rig. And you're doing most of that already.
You're saying, so the people already feel that they already have their big LCD TV.
I feel like the Xbox One is an unnecessary step between stuff that I've seen my friends do with their gaming PCs. Granted, you can't, maybe you can, I don't know, but even if you can run your cable into a gaming PC, like we discussed earlier, cable is honestly becoming less and less of a factor. So, yeah, I don't know what they're hoping to get with all of these new gimmicks. It's going to come down to games one way or another.
Well, so that's what we said this before. I think it's the last hurrah for console generations, in quotes, like the official. Here's Generation 8. What's after this? What's going to come next?
Right.
You know, is it going to be needed in 6 years when I'm 1,000 years old? Is it going to be needed to have? All right, we have awesome graphics now. Now it's super awesome graphics that you can only tell if you like squint at it. You know, I mean, photorealism. We're almost there, but I don't think people even want that. You know, that's really the last frontier.
I want my video games to look like video games to a degree.
And a lot of people say that.
Yeah, I don't want them to be photorealistic.
If you want to go back to photorealistic, we'll play the Daedalus Encounter with Tia Carrera. You know, again. Where the hell did I pull that one out of?
I don't know.
Man, I have a wealth of your PC hair. ROM knowledge. My hair? That's my hair. Should I get a cut?
It's puffy.
So, I mean, yeah, not much more to say on the Xbox One. I'm going to get a Wii U probably well before I get a PS4 or Xbox One, but there's no way in hell I'm going to consider Xbox One after the DRM and Kinect stuff. that they did they did a 180 on to their credit, but the fact that they even brought it up to me is bad enough.
My last word on it is, and I've said this before, if D4 by Swery 65 doesn't get ported to the PS3, I'll borrow an Xbox One from work to play that one game. But
carry out that pyramid block.
So, all right. So what do we have next on here? You want to?
Well, up next on the CU podcast.
Awful.
Let's talk about this. This is interesting. This is also on, you know, making the rounds today. This is just a goofy thing. And we talked about this before. A rare Magic card graded sold to, around a few days ago for $27,000.
An Alpha Black Lotus, right?
Correct. Which Alpha means it's the first ever release. Yeah. What was it, 93? First Magic cards?
Probably.
And the Black Lotus is a powerful card, right? It's hard to find.
It's powerful. It was banned.
It was banned.
Can't use it. I don't know. I mean, I have to say a couple things about Magic first. I really like the basic idea of the game. It's a ton of fun to play. It's not nearly as hard to learn as people think it is. The artwork on the cards a lot of times is very gorgeous. But what kills me about it is it's a money sink. Even when you go into playing Magic and you say, I'm just going to play it casually, it still becomes a money sink. You still find a way to want more cards, build more decks, and to a degree, if you don't keep up on it, you can't play competitively. Now, basically what I'm trying to say is I'm coming from a spot of actually really enjoying the game. I do think it's crazy that the card went for that much, but I don't...
Do you compare this to graded video games at all?
I don't. I compare it to graded sports cards, which is different.
Even though this is something you actually play.
You don't play alpha cards. They haven't.
You're saying if you bought this card, you couldn't even play it in any form.
Correct. Legally, in a tournament, you cannot play this card in any form.
You can play with your friends.
There are people who play open rules, but even those people tend to not play some of these things. The way Magic works is in cycles. So yes, this card really has no value to a player. This is something that is for a sports card collector.
So what's the cultural value of this? Why did this go for so much money?
It's
not just rarity.
Well, it's one of the first cards that was banned in the game. It was one of the most powerful cards upon release. It was one of the most sought after, and it was notoriously limited. So I think that's the value. I mean, even going all the way back to when I was a teenager,
there was 1,100 printed according to this.
Okay, when I go back,
1,100. That's not a small amount for something like this.
Not a large amount.
It's not a small amount for $27,000. That's the point.
No, it's not. But a card is going to get destroyed a lot quicker.
Sure, but how many things still exist? I would still hundreds of these still exist. I would say. Easily.
I don't know about that.
You don't think so?
I don't.
There weren't children buying these in 93. These were high school kids.
No, these were kids.
They weren't small kids.
I was buying Magic cards in 8th grade. No one
That's
took
not
care
a kid. You're 14.
Yeah, but no one took care of this stuff.
You're 14, though. You're
no one took care of this stuff. They threw it in a box and let other stuff accumulate on top of it. So,
I'm not sure about that, because I remember this card getting stolen when I was in high school. They knew this was a special card even back then. And I do remember even, we're talking, you know, mid-90s, I do remember kids showing it and not putting it away, not playing it. I do remember that, even back then. So I don't know. I would think that even back then they knew this was a special card. But that's besides the point. $27,000 for a graded 9.5 Black Lotus. I wanted to bring it up because to me it's like, I compare it to, you know, grading games, that what happens when grading something slips into your hobby, especially when it's a playable hobby. You might say this isn't playable. What if they start doing this with other cards? Then what does it become at that point? You know,
does it
change then when it's cards that say they're still played and now people are starting to get graded and maybe they don't want to play them? It's awkward carrying around graded stacks of hard cards, you know?
I think Magic is unique in the fact that as of right now, if you're a player of any seriousness, the cards that you play with aren't being graded. You might be setting some aside, hedging your bets that in years it's going to be worth something. But I think you're looking at it wrong. It's not like grading a video game, because the cards in Magic that are worth money are ones that you can't play anyway. So they basically turn into a sports card, which is something that you look at and you have because you want to have it.
Okay.
So much like a sports card, you can look at the front, and you can look at the back, and then you can put it on a wall, and if that's your thing, you like it. Would I ever want one? No, but I don't see it as any different. Just like you can't play a sports card, and you can still glean everything from a graded,
you don't see it different than a sports card, really?
I don't. I don't, because you bring up cultural significance. I realize that some people
when a sports card's a representation of a figure that someone was actually in, playing sports and he was like a public figure, you don't see there's a difference between that versus a card that's part of a game set, basically.
No, because if I don't care about sports, then it's not culturally significant to me. If you don't care about Magic, I don't expect it to have any significance to you. And don't get me wrong, this doesn't have any significance to me, but I can understand why to some people this would be an interesting item to have. I'm not saying $27,000 is a reasonable price. I'm just saying I do understand why some people would want it.
No, I understand that too. I'm more talking about the price. Well, I'm talking about how does it get to that point?
The pricing on collectibles is just freaking insane. I mean, I don't know how it gets to that point. Because in the world of Magic, Black Lotus is you know, the card that is spoken about the most.
It's a 9.5, which I guess is the highest graded one, and that means it's like centered better than, I guess on the alphas, they weren't all centered correctly.
No, they were alpha, you know, prints. They were basically test runs of cards. So it's weird, but I really don't see it.
The artwork's not even good. It's just a fucking flower.
Like I said, I'm not trying to defend Black Lotus specifically.
I'm being honest. I'm just saying, if it was like a cool piece of art, even I'd be like, okay, maybe, you know. But it's not. It's just a flower over there's nice sunshine coming in on a nice green hill.
It's
actually very peaceful. I'm gonna buy one. I'm gonna buy a low grade one for $100 and
yeah. Put it with your MWCs that you play all the time.
Mm. There's a difference, though. There's not 1,100 NWCs. There's 11. You know, there's 11. There's a slight difference.
Yeah, but those are more durable. See, what I'm saying is I really don't think there's probably that many in existence.
There's hundreds of these. There
20 years later?
There's hundreds.
I just don't think there is.
There's got to be hundreds. There's got to be. Because I knew a guy that found the swap meet last year. He did. Yeah. I mean, it was a beta one, but it was an earlier one. You know.
Your uncle, brother, cousin, Larry Bob?
What was that? What are you trying to say? You making fun of hillbillies? What are you trying to do?
I don't know. I'm just saying one of the 5 million people you know who goes to the flea market.
I just think it's interesting. I don't know. I compare it to having like an early Monopoly card graded, but I guess it's different than that. I just think it's interesting. Well, what's your favorite Monopoly property all around that?
But you got to understand, every set of Monopoly you bought had the same amount of cards in it.
What was your favorite Monopoly property?
Fucking Monopoly is awful.
Marvin Gardens, fuck you. It was not awful. It was
great. Yes, it was. No, that game is phenomenally awful. It was designed to be awful.
No!
Have you read the history of Monopoly? It wasn't supposed to be fun. It was supposed to basically teach the horrors of capitalism.
It's great. It's supposed to be fantastic. It teaches you how great it can be to take over and destroy people's lives.
No, it's not fun.
Waterworks, by the way, is my favorite. Waterworks is my favorite. You got to control the utilities.
I would say one of the yellow ones.
Oh, Marvin Gardens.
Yeah, probably Marvin Gardens.
Yeah,
I guess if I have to have a favorite,
Marvin Gardens was nice. It was nice before Freeport.
Reading Railroad.
Reading Railroad. The Reading Railroad.
I can travel twice as high.
The Reading Railroad.
Yeah.
The horrors. Come on, it's a great game. Then you have Star Wars. It's
awful.
And you have, I just saw there, someone made an AVGN one. They sent them an AVGN Monopoly board. Handmade. Awful. Anyway, that aside, the Black Lotus. Magic. I never got into Magic. I never got into the card games. I see the Pokemon ones, and I see the what are the other big ones?
Yu-Gi-Oh. There's a ton of lesser ones. And then Netrunner's big right now.
I see a binder. I'm like, I don't want to bother that. I said having a bunch of Magic cards. Remember, I had you look at that. I'll probably get rid of at some point. Maybe there's a Black Lotus. No, there isn't. I looked through them all.
No, there isn't.
We're gonna move on from the Reading Railroad. Choo-choo, all aboard the Reading Railroad.
LeVar Burton is your conductor.
We're gonna move on to a retro gaming topic, which I guess you want to start doing every podcast.
I'm just saying we're known for a certain thing, and we shouldn't constantly be talking about. Yes, you are.
I'm known for hair.
Yeah, you're known for hair and reviewing Nintendo games. I don't want to constantly focus on the Xbox One and PS4.
We're not counting constantly. We talked about the Xbox One other time.
It pooped for the first time this week. Let's tell the whole world about it.
It pooped. Yeah, it poops on Friday, right?
No, we were it's been a busy week for both of us. We were at a lack of topics, and I've been thinking about beat-em-ups a lot lately, and I was thinking about, to me, what makes a good beat-em-up and what some of my more favorite ones were. I kind of mentioned in a previous podcast that beat-em-ups are games that I will go back to frequently because they usually tell some sort of, even if it's just implied, they tell some sort of wacky story from start to finish, and it's like watching a really cheap, awful, interactive movie.
Really? You go that far with it?
To a degree. I mean, watching Final Fight, there's a storyline, you know, kind of, too. There's a progression, and it's weird. And, you know, from the alley to the wrestling ring to breaking out. So, yeah, so, you know, I think the design of a beat-em-up is pretty important because beat-em-ups still kind of exist to this day.
Kind of, they do. They still make new ones or remakes. Yeah.
Well, what I'm referring to is you look at the 3D brawlers like God of War and Devil May Cry. These are some of my least favorite games. But it's because beat-em-ups were meant to be bite-sized and kind of beatable, hard, quick. And when it's in a small dose, the beat-em-up formula works very, very well. When it's in a long, drawn-out 8-hour, 9-hour, 10-hour game, I find it to be far less charming. So I find that brevity is a quality in a beat-em-up, you know, about an hour max.
Yeah.
You know, I want an arcade
beat-em-up, 45 minutes.
45 minutes to an hour. You know, multiple characters. You know, I want differences between, you know, light, medium, fast. Even though one of my favorites is Final Fight, I appreciate ones that have a slightly more expanded moveset, like Streets of Rage. 2, 3. And I really like it, and although I like a lot of beat-em-ups that have this, I hate it when the special move takes away health. That's one of the things I've always hated.
I don't. But
the desperation move, I don't like it when it takes...
Okay, here's the caveat.
Okay.
I do like when X-Men gave you, like, 3, then after that it took away energy. Because otherwise, just use this special move the entire time. What's the fun of that? What's the challenge?
See, X-Men is one of my least favorite. It should have just been designed better from the start.
But it's special because you're not supposed to always be able to use it. Unless you have a charge feature, you only use it once every minute. Would you rather have that?
I'd rather have a refilling bar.
But a refilling gauge
or something like that.
There has to be some sort of penalty to using it. Otherwise, just go nuts with it. There's no fun in playing X-Men with unlimited credits because people just use a special power and destroy the game easily. What's the fun of playing it?
Well, that's what people do.
There has to be some structure to control how you play that.
I think balanced combat should be that structure. You don't need to have an overpowered move if you have ways to... The overpowered moves are generally used when you're getting overwhelmed by enemies on screen and your normal attacks can't handle it. So in a game like, say, Streets of Rage 2, where you have a little bit more options, you don't always have to resort to that move. And that there is a move that takes away your life in Streets of Rage. But you generally have a couple other options that you can use first if you plan well before you need to use it. What I'm getting at is design does not always require you to have something that requires a penalty. You can have a strong move without it requiring penalty.
Sure, but then there has to be a balance, like you said. Then you can't just have use it willy-nilly. You have to have either some sort of recharge for it, like Alien versus Predator, or you have to have a penalty. You have to. You can't just run around Final Fight doing the spin kick the entire time and never be getting touched. What's the fun of it?
Well, no, I mean... Like I said, that's design, and you structure it differently. What I like is in some of the later Final Fights that they did on the Super Nintendo, special moves would be inputted using Street Fighter-type motions. Mm-hmm. And because there's warm-up to these moves, there's charge-up to these moves, there's inputs that have to be done, you're inherently taking a risk by using some of these stronger moves. It's easier to get caught off guard, and that's a way to...
That's a way to balance, I guess.
That's so a way to make balance.
So,
that, exactly.
so maybe there's a...
Make it more complicated.
There's a fatigue afterwards where you can't move.
Instead of punch, kick, two buttons for special, you start incorporating more complex controls in there that, like I said, inherently make it more dangerous to use higher risk maneuvers. I think it's not like jumping off a top turnbuckle. But...
Yeah. High risk maneuver! I saw when they used that in video games where it wasn't high risk.
Yeah.
I remember.
In video games, hell, wrestling matches.
This is the beat 'em up. Remember the WrestleMania, the arcade game?
Yes.
That was a beat-em-up. That wasn't a wrestling game.
No, that was a great one.
They'd say, high-risk maneuver, you're doing a suplex or powerbomb. That's not a high-risk maneuver. High-risk is when you're jumping off a top rope or jumping out of the ring. Yeah, that's a high... Even a dropkick's a high-risk versus a powerbomb, you know? I love that game. I figured all the combos for Razor Ramon is my favorite. Anyway.
So, there are some more modern beat-em-ups that have been made. There's Dragon's Crown, which is phenomenal. All hand-drawn.
Haven't played that.
It's all like watercolor and painted, and it's got a grindfest RPG vibe to it. There's like 9 levels you go through, and you get more equipment and better equipment. So basically, it's made by I can't remember his name, head of VanillaWare. He's the guy who handled Capcom's D&D beat-em-ups, which are fantastic. So this is basically the spiritual successor to the D&D beat-em-ups. And then the 3DS has seen some like weird single-screen ones, like Sunrun Kagura, which is mostly known for the boobs on its main characters.
Oh, that's always great. That's like half the beat-em-ups now.
And Code of Princess, which I have and is fun.
But which is the one I like that was mostly female characters that we played, remember, like last
that's
year.
That's a fighting game.
Oh, it's a fighting game.
And I think you're talking about Arcana Heart 3 when we played that.
Yeah, I like that one.
That was really good.
I was thinking about boobs. Anyway.
they're fantastic. Fighters are different. Although, in Europe, fighters are called beat-em-ups, which is fairly
really
funny. Yep. Yeah. So, there are modern ones being made, which is cool to see it's still happening, but I would love to see a return to something like... just like a straightforward final fight.
Sure.
So what are among your favorites? Because, I mean, I can rattle off mine pretty quick. I love Final Fight. Final Fight 1, arcade version.
Final Fight
is phenomenal. And yes. I will play it. I'll play it every couple of months.
Because that was the template for all beat-em-ups to come afterwards.
After, sure.
Yeah, that's what's so important. There wasn't that many before. I loved the original Double Dragon just because it was the prototype. I know Renegade came before, but... Double Dragon did it well for its time. It did it and was fun. And Double Dragon was the first arcade game of mine that was a favorite after like Spy Hunter. I don't know if I say Spy Hunter, but Double Dragon was one I would rush to.
Sure.
Then it was Double Dragon, then it was Final Fight, like a few years later.
I would say for consoles, at least on the early consoles, I love Double Dragon 2. And River City Ransom is of course, a lot of fun to play.
Yeah, it is.
I really feel like River City Ransom is better with two players.
I almost wouldn't call it a beat-em-up. I almost would call it like an adventure game, but that's just me. Due to the fact that it's still
a beat-em-up at heart.
It is. It's more an action game to me because I get for me a beat-em-up is your same experience every time. That to me is like a beat-em-up more or less. But whatever, we're splicing hairs here.
And then Alien vs. Predator is my all-time favorite.
And it's still a crime. It's never been ported. You know, it's never ported over anywhere.
We have it at Luna for our CPS2 harness. And we got it for really cheap. It's a fairly expensive board to get. Got it for cheap because the guy put it on eBay as Alien vs. Predator. So the joke has always been in our head that, like, we were going to get some wacky bootleg that was just, like, a dude... maybe male pattern baldness, walking home from the grocery store, has to fight off some predators, you know, with a bag of groceries.
Or he's a child predator.
So that was funny. So, but I actually looked at Trig the one day after we had it. It was like after like a month, and I said, you should probably take that out of the machine because I'm not doing anything at work. I said, I'm just playing this. Because it was just so refreshing because it hasn't been ported. It had been years since I played it, and I was
Is it still not on any system, even a download?
Still not on any system.
Even The Simpsons finally got on a system.
And I binged on it. And then one that I don't think a lot of people played, but you can play it on like the PS2 Taito collection, or you can check it out on MAME, is Ninja Kids by Taito. It is one of the most bizarre beat-em-ups I've ever played.
I never saw that in the arcade.
It's insane. I mean, there's a reason why you probably never saw it. You're fighting devils, and it's
and it came out in U.S. arcades?
I don't believe it came out in U.S. arcades. I've played it on collections, but I've played through it a couple times.
Heard of it?
It's got a really weird art style too. They look like very angry, like Muppets kind of. I would definitely check out Ninja Kids.
How about Knights of the Round? Was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You can level up the different characters. I mean, first of all, I love beat-em-ups where the different characters have different playstyle. That's why Alien vs. Predator was so important in ushering that in.
Guardian, you ever play Guardian Heroes on the Saturn?
No.
That's a really good one for that. It's a weirder beat-em-up. I'm surprised you haven't played that. I consider them on the gems of the Saturn, but it's longer, so there's like a storyline, but it's just straight-up beat-em-up gameplay. Okay. There's three characters that play completely differently, but what it does is instead of moving on an isometric plane... you jump between three planes back and forth. Okay. So when you're fighting, you actually play it like a fighting game on the plane that you're on. So you can do launches and combos and all sorts of crazy shit, and then jump back and forth between the planes to keep it going.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
That's really fun. Yeah, that's a great one.
The Dungeons & Dragons one, which they finally put on. They put
both of them on there.
I think I only played one of them.
Just
that's an arcade game you don't see too often. I don't think they made a lot of those.
No, they did not.
That's a great one. I like the X-Men one. I know you say you don't. I think the animation and graphics are fantastic.
For as big of an X-Men fan as I am, I can't stand that game.
So what do you like about the X-Men one?
I just don't like it. I just don't like how it plays.
Well, that's one that I do have a problem with, where all the characters fight the same. You know, even though they have different attacks, it's all the same. You do a pin down attack for each.
Yeah.
The powers are all roughly the same. They're a little different between them. Some hit part of the screen. Some go just straight forward, you know. But all the characters move almost the same.
When I first saw it, I mean, you know, at my brother's birthday party, I remember the arcade machine was wherever we had it. And that's all any of us spent our tokens on. And I loved it then. It was just revisiting it later, I didn't like it nearly as much. Oh, and I would be doing a great disservice to the game, but I love the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game.
Oh, it's fantastic.
If you're playing the original, arcade or an arcade perfect version. The Nintendo version is really not good.
That's what I always said. I always said to people that I would have loved the Turtles arcade game, would have owned it if I never played the arcade game. Even as a kid, I was a snob. I was like, this isn't close to the arcade game. I was not interested in playing it as a kid.
It just feels so stuttered and choppy.
Controlled terrible compared to the... The arcade was great because it was so fluid. The way you grab a guy with your weapon and toss him, that was nowhere to be seen in the NES game. They couldn't figure that out at all.
And that game is one that...
This is the NES attack. It's like just two arms going, and it's like...
And that along with Final Fight is one of the beat-em-ups that I think has one of the more cohesive, like, simple-to-follow stories. You know, as you go along, the plot points move from A to B to C, and I like that about it. You know,
you're dead, Twiddles.
Yeah.
So. What's another one? I love the Simpsons arcade game. Great use of the license, like, fantastic use of it for something like that.
So, as someone who was never a huge Simpsons fan, I never got a ton out of it, but I can even admit that it was just a very well-done game.
The team attacks you can do.
The little mini-games where you inflate the hot air balloons games, in between
them. They just packed... They did the most with that they could have. Like, you can't think of that much more they could have done. The way the graphics would blow up and the cheap effects they did with that.
And the sprite scaling and stuff.
Whoops. Oh, there goes the DVD. Just an enjoyable game. Even the little stuff, like when you die as Bart, you're Bart Man when you come back to life. Just the little touches that show, like, they Konami put a ton into that.
Yep.
And again, that was one that was never on a system, unfortunately. So you had a lot of these great beat 'em ups. Hell, even the only good Final Fight port was on Sega CD.
They finally did an arcade perfect one for Xbox Live, but yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, talking back then.
Sure, yeah.
I was, you know how pissed I was?
The Super Nintendo one.
Do you know how pissed I was that I would have forked out $70 if they just had two players and had Guy in it? Like, that's it. Like, that, $70, here you go.
Yeah, the missing level is my least favorite level in the game, so that's not even...
That's not a big deal to me.
That's not even the biggest problem. The problem is no two players, no Guy.
We can't fit the ROM chips in until 2 years later. We come out with the sequel. You know, it's like,
yeah.
What? Like, what are you doing? Like, you're telling me they came out with a Street Fighter 2 that was close to the arcade, but they couldn't do it for Final Fight? That doesn't make any sense to me.
People still eat it up because I'm one of those people who has to be bluntly honest when people buy games. They're like, let me get Final Fight for the Super Nintendo. Oh, and I go, I said, you know, there's, you know, it's only one player. And every once in a while, you know, I'll get a person who goes, oh, right, and they won't buy it. But most people are like, I don't care. I'm like, what are you... It's awful. It's awful. What are you playing? Like, anything else would be better.
And then, of course, there's no Guy. They couldn't fit another character in.
They could have.
My favorite character!
Calm yourself.
I never used Hagger. Never used Hagger.
I didn't when I was younger, and now I use Hagger all the time.
Well, now, okay. Well, now I switch it up. I like switching it up.
Yeah.
I love doing the pile driver.
Yeah.
I love headbutting him a few times and doing the pile driver. It's like maximum damage.
He's the mayor!
Here!
You are action mayor Mike Hagar. You're taking it to the streets.
I love how Sarah and I Slam Masters is like the prequel. You love that?
Yeah.
One of the first prequels in video game history, I think. Slam Masters is a great beat-em-up. You can't call it that a wrestling game. It's a beat-em-up. Sorry, not Slam Masters. You can't call it a wrestling game. It's not a wrestling game when...
No, I mean, like I said, there's been this revitalization recently of what are kind of known as single-screen beat-em-ups. And you could easily call something like Saturday Night Slam Masters a single-screen beat-em-up.
And I did use the Mexican wrestler in Saturday Night Slam Masters. The one with the mask. What was his name? That's what I used, though. I only used him. I didn't use Machine Gun Mike or whatever. Or I didn't use Hagger. I didn't use some of the other guys. Was it Machine Gun Mike? I forget. It was some weird name. But anyway, other beat-ups real quick. What were the overlooked ones? Did you ever play, what was that one? I can't think of it now. I just went blank. Save me.
The Spider-Man one is...
Oh, Spider-Man. You never heard it. That was so great how you never heard it. You
finally played
it and you
loved it. I
didn't
know about that one. That one's really good.
You love my meme cabinet for that because you got to play it on there.
I hate your meme cabinet.
Wish it worked right now.
Spider-Man's fun because it has a neat blend of the isometric levels and the those weird 2D.
The 2D ones they throw in every... There's like three.
Those were pretty fun. And
the graphics are fantastic. The sprites are so huge in that game.
Yeah.
It's... It was four players. It's Submariner as a playable character. It's just cool. Even though he was not Spider-Man's ally ever, as far as I know. You had Black Cat, which makes sense. Yes. You had Hawkeye, which is bizarre. I don't remember reading ever a Spider-Man comic where Hawkeye showed up. But he was in there, which is funny because at the same time he was in the Captain America game. So he got like double duty, which was weird. And he had Submariner, which was cool.
The only other one that's a bit under the radar that I like is Riot Zone for the PC Engine or the TurboGrafx. It's a CD-based game.
Yeah, I played that.
And it's only one player, but it's just... It's fun. I don't hate it. I like it.
That's kind of weird. Just real quick, going back to Spider-Man. That was never ported either. That was a Sega game. That wasn't even on like the Saturn. Like, what? What's with all those mid-90s or early mid-90s games not being on the Sega?
Because they're all... Well, I think it's a pretty easy answer. They all have licenses... And
just for the arcade, though?
And those licenses got swapped around so quick. Those were all hot properties. Aliens, Predators, Simpsons.
Spider-Man?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's the only answer I can give. Is that,
I guess, yeah, the X-Men wasn't ported either.
Yeah, the X-Men. So those licenses just changed hands way too quickly to ever get truly ported.
They probably got them for like a year, and that's it.
Yeah, because think about it. Sega made some good Spider-Man games for the Genesis and the Sega CD.
That's right, so why couldn't it come out with
But then... But then Acclaim suddenly started making that. So these things just...
And that's why there's...
They moved quick.
That web of firewall, maybe it's hard to find them because maybe the license was running out. They rushed out like 12 of them. I never came across one. Anyway, that's it for beat-em-ups. I mean...
Maybe next time we'll cover platformers or something. Or
I love beat-em-ups.
Me too.
The satisfaction, the psh, psh. That's why the Final Fight 2 was like, you felt the hits when you punched him. The guy retracted his punch like when you punched him. It was like, he slowed his punch.
Yeah, I love something like Turtles, but something like Final Fight is great because I love that bassy thud sound you get when you're punching the bad guys.
By the way, how shitty is Final Fight Guy that, you know, when I heard of Final Fight Guy, like, I never knew it came out. It was a Blockbuster exclusive. You know, in Japan, I think it was more readily available. So, Blockbuster, you know, was a rental only. So, Final Fight Guy's in the game now. It came out like, I guess,
a year later. Yeah, but it replaces Cody.
They didn't tell you that. You know, it's just like in the box, like, oh, that's good. And, oh, by the way, still no two players. You know, like,
Cody, and it's still the same problem.
It's so cheap. You know, and it goes for a ton of money. I have it loose. I would never look for the box. The box probably not goes for hundreds. You know, but it's just like, you know, I love playing them. It's like, I like to be able to switch the option two player. Yeah. Anyway, that's an annoyance. So if you have a Sega CD, look out for Final Fight. The only true version of it, which has good music, too.
Moving on. I think
it's
time for Q&A.
Actually, there's a topic that came up. We'll discuss it real quick. This only happened today. EA is now the exclusive Star Wars game producer for the next 10 years.
Okay.
And
I don't have a whole lot to say on that.
I think it's interesting. Maybe, you know, with the Disney purchase, like, we want EA making our games. I don't know. But it looks like the strategy is going to be they're going to not do movie games.
I did see that. They don't want to do movie games, which is nice. I also don't see this as a big deal. I hate the fact that EA constantly buys up exclusive licenses, but I mean, LucasArts was exclusively doing the games before that.
That was the same company.
I don't think it really changes the game much.
You see it being harmful to the games, being that you when you have all these games under one roof, it's a big roof, though, could that be sort of too insular in a way? Or do you still see them maybe farming them out to others?
It could be, but it's like Activision handles a lot of the Marvel games, and I just don't see it as being big news or that big of a deal. I mean, maybe to someone who's more invested in Star Wars, it is. I would say let's see what actually happens. I believe I heard some team members actually are now working under it. So if the game quality turns out to be the same as it was, and people are happy with that, I don't think it's a huge deal.
New Battlefront game they're developing.
Yeah, that's been rumored to be that was announced.
Those were pretty popular when they came out. Yeah, it's been like what
a long time.
Something like 9 years.
Battlefront 2 was a late PS2 and Xbox release.
How about, I remember they had the I don't think they did that well. The like real time strategy game in space. Remember that one on the PC? I think it did that well, but that was the one I remember that looked pretty cool.
Remember that one.
So it was more of a like how that's a micro level, it's a macro level. How you like you sent your fleets over to different star systems and battled it. It was like it was more like a Warcraft level of game.
No, my Star Wars gameplay ended with X-Wing versus TIE Fighter and X-Wing and TIE Fighter. Like those games are phenomenal, but I haven't played much.
That's gonna bother me now. What game that was? It was the real time strategy. Oh, Galactic Battlegrounds. That's what it was. Galactic Battlegrounds. I probably never heard about it. I think that's like 2003. It's got to be 10 years. And yeah, it was more like, think of like a Warcraft, but Star Wars. That's basically what it was.
Right. Well, EA's buying more stuff.
There you have it. So that's going to be a standalone on YouTube. EA's buying more stuff. So we're going to go into Q&A. Remember, guys, hashtag CU Podcast on Twitter. We'll check it out. We'll give you a minute before we hit the topics, and I'm going to tweet that out. How's that burrito sitting in your stomach? Pretty well.
It's fine.
Eating before the podcast goes, I'm starving. I need a burrito. Stomps out. And then next, 20 minutes later, I just hear the rumbling in the stomach.
It's a good burrito, though, man.
Why the ballast point? Where's the Tecate?
It was actually...
Tecate, as I call it.
I only needed one beer, and it was actually...
One big beer, but yes.
It's actually cheaper for me to buy a... $5 good beer today instead of buying the... I wasn't planning a Ted. I just didn't want to spend the money on the Tecate. Plus, frankly, I know it was becoming a running gag, but like I said, it was not my beer of choice. It was out of necessity and convenience. Ballast Point is my favorite brewery, period. And they're San Diego, they're local, so...
You're supporting a local brew.
When they had Fathom for $5 at the convenience store, I decided, why the hell not?
Where are you slipping out to, Ian?
The restroom.
Speaking of burrito. So
no, not that kind of restroom.
Well, there's more than... All right, so we'll be back after these messages. It's very interesting because, they don't want to to make it a point that they don't want to focus on movie games, I think they realize that movie games usually suck.
They did say that,
because they're restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
Look at all the Marvel movie games that come out the past few years. Most of them are terrible.
I mean, they didn't bother with an Avengers one.
Video game years! DVD available. They didn't bother with the... You're right. They didn't do an Avengers one.
Mm-mm.
Just the biggest movie
they
ever.
They didn't do a Thor one. They didn't do an Avengers one.
They did a Thor movie. A Thor game. The first one. Did they? Or they cancel it? I remember seeing it developing.
They
didn't
do one. That's fine.
They did Captain America. They did Iron Man.
Yeah, they did Captain.
That's right. Avengers, the biggest movie ever. No game. It's kind of weird. It would sell just by default. That's kind of a missed opportunity.
I'm glad I don't have to deal with it.
If it you don't,
50 freaking used copies of it.
All right, it's Q&A time. Our favorite part of the show, because we don't have to think. We got a lot last week. Eventually, we're at the point where it's pick and choose because we can't have 80 questions.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is from November 16th, so 4 days ago. This is from Tyler at Sylvester 41596. If you could cross over any two game series, which would you do? For a fighting game or any genre?
I don't know about other genres, but for fighting games, I always was upset when they started hinting. When Capcom, despite the fact that I've lost a lot of faith in them, and I'll say that at every opportunity, when they announced they had a new Versus thing coming up, and it ended up being the Street Fighter X Tekken games, I'd always hoped it was going to be Capcom versus Namco, because there would have been some insanely cool matchups. You could have had Valkyrie from Legend of Valkyrie, you could have had Gil from Jiraga. The fact that they turned Mordok into a playable character in MVC3 shows that they could have done something with Dig Dug, Pac-Man. Plus,
sure.
Even though I never got into all of them, there's a lot of fans of the Tales of games, Tales of Destiny, Vesperia,
yes.
Graces. You have all those Namco RPGs. I mean, the Namco library...
You can do whatever you want, basically.
Yeah, Namco's library is just filled to the brim with cool stuff you could have done. And I'm not just saying that as a Namco fanboy, even though I am a huge Namco fanboy. Would have liked to have seen a fighting Ridge Racer car in there somewhere. But yeah, that's what I would have liked to see. Namco versus Capcom.
What the hell is that? The Tekken...
I think it got quietly shit-canned.
Really?
I think it did, yes.
Did they see the sales of the other one and be like, yeah, we don't want
to
do it?
No,
or?
I just think they realized, how the fuck are we supposed to do this? Like... I don't know what it is, but I believe it was quietly canceled.
Wow, because remember that was the hype. It was like, well, we're going to do both versions of it.
Yeah. Well, so the backlash against the original was pretty bad.
Was there a backlash? I remember looking at it, I was like, It's like
it was more.
It was just a dumbed down Street Fighter, less buttons.
It was more the DLC. It was more the DLC and how they handled that. And Capcom got a lot of heat for it.
What was wrong with the DLC with it? It was just.
So there was this. There's a gem system in it, and this is actually one that I avoided buying completely. So if I'm wrong, I'm sure someone will correct me. But I'm pretty sure I'm right on this. When you equip, when you start the game, you can equip a gem when you pick your character that gives you a boost to offense, defense, etc.
That already sounds terrible.
But I believe there were DLC gems that you could buy.
They made it better.
That made you better.
It's now, like it's like the Black
supposedly
Lotus.
Supposedly they had introduced. I believe they introduced some sort of tournament mode DLC that deactivated gems. But for a lot of people, it was too late.
Sounds awful, absolutely awful.
I had no interest in playing.
It's like the Black Lotus. We're having a fighting game that you're supposed to be on an even keel, and then we'll just, no, pay money to be better. It's like having a super piece in chess that could, like, jump all the pieces, you know? All
right, what would your crossover be?
Legend of Cage times Danny Silva's Indie Heat. That'd be very interesting.
Okay, fair enough. Question.
Next question is, did you guys, this is from at Hassan Simo, did you guys ever heard about Sagata Sanshiro? It's mind-blowing.
Yeah. He's hilarious. It was an ad campaign that was done by Sega for the Saturn, and Sagata Sanshiro, I believe, is based on it was based on an Akira Kurosawa film character. But basically, he's this, like, action guy who, like, was the spokesperson for the Saturn, but he, like, ran around, like, saving people and stuff. And when the Saturn was fading out of existence, they ran leading into the Dreamcast, they ran a commercial where basically it was implied that, like, Nintendo or Sony launched a missile at Tokyo, and he, like, stopped the missile and, like, rode it off into the
sky.
That's
really funny.
So it was, he was incredibly popular. He has a couple of cameos, I believe, in a couple of Sega games, if you look really
so
hard for
him.
And
cool.
Just, we never saw him over here, but, like, one of the funniest, like, fake pitch.
Well, Saturn ever. Was so much more successful in Japan than here.
Sure.
Here was almost like a footnote.
Yeah.
But, okay. This is from Cygnus Destroyer, who's always a faithful listener. Ian, I'm looking to expand my taste in anime. Do you have any recommendations?
Yeah.
Can you keep this under 2 minutes? That's what
yeah, I'll try. I actually don't watch as much as people would think, but I have seen probably about 25 different series, and I'll recommend three. I'll recommend Cowboy Bebop because it's an anime that anyone can watch. And I mean, people who have no interest in anime should be able to watch Cowboy Bebop and enjoy it. Good characters, great story, good mix of episodes that form one arc, mm-hmm. and then some that are just single shots that are, you know, that stand on their own very well. Azumanga Daioh is fantastic. I love it. From the outside, it looks like a stupid anime about five teenage girls, but it really avoids most of those stereotypes, I think in part probably because it was written by a woman. It's really just a story about five friends as they go through 3 years of high school. There's no romance, none of that weird, like, drama BS. Very, very little fan service, very surreal sense of humor, and sometimes touching and charming. Lastly, Evangelion, my favorite all-time anime series. It has a shitload of problems. I'm not even going to pretend that it's a perfect anime series. The series itself gets it's paced poorly. The characters are mostly unlikable, and that's on purpose. But still, for as popular as it is, it can be kind of hard to watch. But it's a really good investigation of the human psyche, depression, loneliness, and I mean, watch the TV series. It's really good.
Okay.
I might have been 2.5 minutes, but I think I did all right.
I just zoned out. next question. As I did some research for my next question, or upcoming question. This is from at Ryu Wilson. When is the next CU podcast? Is there a schedule? Thanks, Pat. You're welcome, Ryan. It's every other Wednesday. We record every other Wednesday.
It's tonight.
It's now. But if you're watching it now, Thursday or later, it's then when you're watching.
Don't break your brain.
But it's basically they come online every other Thursday, but you can hear us prattle through it live on Wednesday. They're 99% the same. But, you know, but you get them on YouTube, and plus there's parts on YouTube
sure.
the next day, which isn't 100%, but it's like 80%. This is from God Bubble. Ian, impossibly, Pat, what is your best horror story from working retail? Your best horror story? Probably that birthday party you went to, but
yeah, I can't tell the birthday party right now. This, like I said a couple weeks ago, it's really hard for me to get into like what the worst is, but I'll just give you a recent one that was fairly amusing, and I'm going to cut out a lot of the details. In fact, I probably can't really say a lot of it. We had this guy come in. He was under the influence of some special magic, and and he was trying to sell a PS2, and pulls out, he's like, I want to sell this PS2. And I said, okay, well, I can't take it. Well, why? Well, because there's no screws in it, and the lid is coming off. Like, the top is actually coming off. Okay, well, I mean, just test it out. It works. I mean, you can do something with it. And I go, I can't turn it on because it's missing a power button. There's no power button, so I can't turn it on. And it's wet. It's wet. And actually, that was my coworker who pointed that out. And so the guy lifts it up and goes, come on, you can give me something for it. At this point, his wife walks in and goes, give me $20. Like, and he throws some money at her, and she turns, and he goes, why? And she's like, I want to buy something outside. This is in La Mesa.
I thought maybe she was like, give me $20 to you for the system.
No, give me $20 to her husband. She goes back outside.
Were they like meth heads?
I think it was more crack.
Oh, that's better.
More crack than meth. he lifted the lid up and points and goes, look at all these microchips. I'm like, yes.
There's some gold in there.
He's like, you can do something with these. You can put these in your laptop and make them run faster. And I said, that's not how it works. And then he asked me if he could have a paper towel. And I said yes. And he called me a lifesaver. And he turned around and left the store.
So it had a happy ending.
Yeah, this was a week ago.
You should have told next time, hey, this gold in there, you can get the gold out. People are starting to do that.
I know they are. Yeah, people are starting to buy kits that get the gold out of chips.
How much gold is there that you can make?
Not a lot in modern chips, from what I heard. Because a guy who works at a recycling center who buys games from me came in and was telling me about it. And he's like, it's really in old 80s computers. Like,
really old
Apples, Ataris. He's like, older chips have more gold in them.
Man, we're going to see our Ataris disappear now because of that. Or people are going to be cannibalizing Apple IIs. Can you imagine that? Or
that's sad.
That is kind of sad. Okay, I worked at Suncoast Movie Company, your motion picture company, the shitty store chain's called. They're still around. There's a lot less of them because...
I thought they closed completely.
Did they close? I think they're still around.
All right, well, maybe.
They might have gotten bought out by FYE or something. Are they still around?
Yeah, I think that's what happened, actually.
Either way, good, because they suck ass. Mm-hmm. But basically, I worked in a mall in New Jersey that had it. It was one of my first retail jobs. Not my first. Well, actually, it's not retail, working in a supermarket. But this was on the advent of when DVDs first started getting made enough so that they started to push out VHS a little bit. But literally, I worked at the time when you could basically count all the DVDs when there were still maybe only a couple hundred DVDs that existed. If we're talking late 90s, 98, 99. You know, when the biggest DVD was Fight Club, because it had all these extras, and extras were like, oh, there's a commentary.
I still have that edition.
But basically, at the time, VHS still dominated the store. DVDs were like 20% of the store.
Mm-hmm.
And still would be probably the next 5 years. Until like 10 years back, 2003 or so. So it was terrible because, I'll just say this without going into detail, I was sexually harassed there. And I wasn't this big macho guy. I was sexually harassed just because there was a female that was, I guess, in a higher position. And she was younger and happened to be also the daughter of my fourth grade teacher. That aside. Exactly. So she would just make comments and make me feel uncomfortable. I'm being totally serious. Besides that, you think working in a store would be fun. Blockbuster should have worked. That would have been a lot more fun. But they would rearrange the set. Like, say, okay, Pat, just to keep you busy. You know, there's nothing going on, say, on a Tuesday afternoon. Go organize the sci-fi section. When this dumb bitch would take a couple of the VHSs on purpose and take them out of the place, and you'd reorganize that a couple of days ago, and just to see if you had done it, would go and check, oh, you missed Return of the Jedi there. And it's like, we work in a goddamn VHS store. These are, you know, there's only two busy parts of the year, like maybe Christmas, you know, and it's supposed to be fun. I gotta see the same Wiggles VHS tape every day. We can't even play a different VHS tape, and you're honestly having me do busy work where I'm making minimum wage at the mall trying to hawk your stupid fucking membership plan to get 5% off your VHS tapes.
We really took you to a dark place, didn't we?
You did.
Yeah.
Also because one time I came in with a dark gray shirt, and since it wasn't black, they sent me home to change. And so when these sons of bitches...
Oh, Jesus.
So I didn't even give any notice. This is okay. This was coming off the knee injury. I think I told you about. Mm-hmm. I had a knee injury in college, and so like it was just walking was difficult, but that was hard enough, you know. But I'm not complaining. The whole point was it was a weird time for me. It's the only job I can get at the time, and I didn't give notice. They had the audacity to call me up when I was home from college. For Christmas, and asked me if I wanted to work hours.
Wow.
You believe that? Oh, yeah, I'll work minimum wage to come into your shitty store and get treated like dirt so I can have people, steal stuff off the walls in front of me and I can't say anything because we don't want to deal with it and give them credit for it. You know, I'll just do stuff like that. Eat a dick, Suncoast.
All right.
Oh, I can get into the guy in his late 20s that thought he was the shit because he was the manager at Suncoast, and he was driving his, like, you know, 93 Camaro or whatever, you know, like, whatever. Just awful experience.
Doesn't sound good.
Doesn't sound good. I think I saw him, that guy in particular. I think I saw him, and they were all awful. The only nice people were the ones I yelled at because it was like, you're not pushing, you know, you got to push the card membership. It's like, I don't get a percentage. You know, it's the same thing probably GameStop. But yeah, it's a very dark place. I'm sorry. I'm not checking the chat. People are probably like, holy shit, Pat's just going off. Godbubble, again, what is your favorite porter or stout? Are you a fan of the Flying Dog Brewery? That's a funny name for a brewery.
Yes, I am. And my favorite porter or stout? Ninkasi's Vanilla Otis is a really good stout. I also like... I also really like the Belching Beaver Milk Stout. That's a fantastic one that just started getting bottled in San Diego.
Was it a contest of the weirdest name? Is that what we're right now?
And then...
that doesn't sound appetizing.
And then Anchor Porter is really, really good too. So I'd say those three. And I like the Imperial Russian Stouts by Stone more than I thought I would.
This is from at Anton Nukio. I think he always tries to do funny questions. I think last time he said, I got nothing. I think that was him.
Who?
Anton Nuki?
No, the person who said I got nothing is Jace Nakarado. You can't pronounce.
How punk are you of a punk, Ian? Are you more of a punk than the NES punk? Punk?
I'm not really punk at all, unfortunately.
Well, punk is always the attitude. That's where I get the moniker, I think. But from Dear Someone, what's your all-time favorite console controller?
You know, I really like the original Nintendo controller. It's a rectangle, it's not ergonomic, but I like the feel of the buttons, and I like the D-pad. I also really like the Sega 6-button controller, and honestly...
I like the Sega 6-button.
I don't hate the PlayStation controller. I think the DualShock has always been fairly decent. Some people don't like how close the analog sticks are,
no.
But I don't mind it. The 360 controller is decent, but the D-pad sucks.
If it didn't break down, the Super Nintendo controller I love.
See, I hate it. Everything feels way too mushy on the Super Nintendo controller.
Well, the D-pad, I love the convex versus concave buttons. Can you please just do that on your controllers? It's so simple to do that. You're gonna save money on plastic. Please do that so I know where my thumb is on the right. Just do it. Why? How come no one ever did it besides Nintendo? It's not hard. Dreamcast never did it. PlayStation controllers never did it. Someone do convex and concave buttons again, for God's sake.
Ladies and gentlemen, Pat has left the building.
It's so simple. It's simple.
I hate that controller. The Super Nintendo controller is one of my least favorite.
But it was a prototype. It had the triggers on it. Had convex and concave.
And it's like playing a game with mashed potatoes.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, Ian. I beat Street Fighter 2 on level 7 difficulty without dying once just fine.
Congratulations. With that controller. You didn't enjoy the feel of it.
No, I didn't. This is from at Brandon Oak. There's two questions. One question, please. What kind of prices have you pay for NES games? The Canadian market seems rough. Not sure what constitutes a good deal. Well, that's kind of difficult because I guess it means on average. To me, $3 is a golden rule for a random NES game. That to me is it. But in Canada, your mileage may vary up there.
That was one question.
But it's a second. Oh, this is example. Example. Oh, X.
Maybe you should read everything first.
Well, okay. Example, I got Star Tropics 2 complete in box, Dragon Warrior 3, and Crystalis for $45, and I feel that's been one of my better deals.
Which Dragon Warrior?
3. That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, that is a good deal.
Crystalis is like, what, $10, $15
game? I'd say so, yeah.
Dragon Warrior 3 is like, what, $30?
No, Dragon Warrior 3 is shot the fuck up.
Really? Why? Yeah.
Dragon Warrior 3 and 4 have gone up.
I mean, it used to be, the way it used to be 20 for 2, 30 for 3, 40 for 4.
I think it's probably 40 for 3 and like 60 for 4 now.
Okay. Well, that's a good
deal. That's my guess.
This is from Megan, Mega5K. What in the hell is the appeal of shooter games, and why are they in decline? Uh-oh. Ian's going to get angry.
What shooter? If we're talking about, like, shooters, like I define them, side-scrolling shooters, the appeal is that they're very tough, and if you like them...
Is that what she means by shooter? I picture shooter as ships. Running gun to me is what she... Like, Contra. Is that what she means?
I feel like she means ships. Shooter.
Is that because you go with shmups versus shooter.
No, shooter is shooter.
I know. That's how I go. I don't
To me, it
she said space shooters in the chat.
Okay. When you get through a particularly challenging portion of a shooter, there's an incredible rush if you're into that game. I mean, you are literally holding on and just maneuvering. And when you're playing on the right difficulty and your skill is matched with your difficulty perfectly,
it's magic, right?
There's constant 30-second segments where your head is just this constant reaction of, I should have died, 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 and yes, boom, I made it. And there is nothing more rewarding to me in games than successfully maneuvering through a really difficult boss and a shooter and just doing it. I love seeing how far I can get with a shooter. I never get bored of playing the same levels over and over because I love one crediting a shooter, just seeing how far I can get on one credit.
In a way, it's sort of the purest gaming form to me.
Yeah.
Because it's simple, yet still challenging.
It's all reaction.
You need great reflexes. That's why I like, because I have good reflexes in games. That's why I like shooters.
Yeah.
There's an instant feedback thing where you said, I should have died. I got through it. Whoa, and I'm still going. You don't have time to think.
And there's just the really cool fact that, like, especially in a space shooter or whatever, it's like, I am one man against, say, an enormous alien army, and I'm all they got. And
that's your dark fantasy we're in now.
Yeah.
This is from Jace Nakarado. Did I say
Rado?
It right? I said it right.
No, you said Rado.
I'll get there. Well, Ian loves music, but I gotta ask you this, Pat, in caps. It's in caps. I have to say like that. What's some of your favorite bands? Both of your favorite album. I love Queen.
I was gonna answer that question for you.
I love Queen. I love it. For newer stuff, I haven't followed them in a while. Do they have the Killers have a new band, a new album the past few years? The Killers?
I have no idea.
I like the Killers for newer stuff. Going back to old stuff again, I love just classic rock in general. It's hard for me to have specific. I don't have a lot of specific bands I can say they're my favorites because I can recognize that you can have a favorite band, but they can still have sucky songs. So it's hard for me to get behind a lot of bands and say, oh, I love this band, but then, okay, they have a song that sucks. So I usually like groups of songs or like an album or something. Favorite album, though. Do I have a favorite album? That's tough, again, because, again, there's not a lot of albums I can sit through every song and be like, oh, that's a great one. I like listening to individual songs more than albums, which is kind of hypocrisy, you know, or not hypocrisy, but it's kind of just, I don't know.
My favorite album, picking an actual favorite is incredibly difficult, but I always fall back on, just for the sake of conversation, Orbital 2, or Orbital's Brown album, depending on what you want to call it, is my favorite. It is the soundtrack to my brain at the most perfect moments. The sound is just phenomenal. Every song on there is great. And
Happy to Be Hardcore Volume 3,
no,
which I had in college.
No. I mean, I love Happy Hardcore, but I would not call any of Anabolic Frolic's mixes anything other than mediocre at best.
It's fun.
But yeah, no, Orbital 2, for the sake of discussion, I'll say is my favorite album of all time.
This is also, I think I need a plaque or something for most consistent question asker. I'll wait until CU Podcast 100. You do that, Jace.
We'll get there.
We'll get that out to you. This is from M. Geiger 2341. Are you guys going to watch the new Turkey Day marathon this year hosted by Joel Hodgson online? Is he referring to MC3K at least to do a Turkey Day marathon? Is Joel Hodgson going to... That'd be cool as hell. The problem with that property is the MC3K property is owned by the producer, who supposedly now is a dickbag for how he's controlling it. So it's a shame because that's why you'll never see the property ever again. There'll never be a reunion, an official reunion, because of that, unless he renounced it. He was the guy who played the vacuum and I forget his name, which is funny because he had the least amount to do with the show in terms of its creative, and he's the one that owns the property, which is a shame. But we'll see. They did have a reunion like skit online, I think, a year or two back, though, with actually they had Joel back for something, but I forgot what it was. But I'll check it out. From Jerron, another retail question. Your worst holiday working experience? Mine! In caps, mine! Working at, I guess, BN, Barnes & Noble, I guess. We had a crazy customer with a return that needed four cops. So, is there a holiday specific one you can say real quickly?
Oh, geez. You know, no, I don't have anything specific. While I've definitely worked more than 16 days in a row, I think the most I've ever done is 28.
That's great.
Working 16 days in a row in a restaurant as a waiter during the holiday season was absolutely abysmal. I had tons of money for booze and party favors, but, you know, it was definitely not a fun time.
This is a shout out. Thank you for answering my noob question on how to fix clean retro console games. That's from X-Files 2000,
1999. To who? From what?
X-Files 2000,
to
1999.
Yeah, a shout out to who?
To you.
Oh.
Shout out to Ian. Thank you!
Okay. You're welcome.
This is from Game Mana. This is a three-part tweet. God. All right. $50 for Mortal Kombat back in the day. Games are now $70. 3DO was around $700 or so when it came out. So, do you find it interesting prices haven't changed much for consoles and games over the last 25 years? Manuals aren't needed as much anymore, and new games usually have much anyway. Do you miss the old school manuals? That's like four different questions.
Okay. The first part is, do we find it weird that game prices have changed, though? Because inflation is taking effect, and a $70 game back then is not $70.
So games actually are cheaper.
Yeah, they're actually cheaper now. Same thing with like the 3DO. If you account for inflation, I think I saw something like that. The 3DO is close to like $900 by today's monetary standard. So they haven't really stayed the same. As far as the manual question, yes, I absolutely miss manuals. I hate getting a 2-page gray insert that just shows me what buttons are on my freaking PlayStation 3.
Tutorials are terrible. The first level of games are now tutorials that basically baby feed you how to play.
Yeah, I just picked up a fighting game that came out yesterday, Aquapaza, Aqua Plus Dream Match for the PS3. That's actually made by the people who made Arcana Heart 3. And lo and behold, the manual is full freaking color with some move lists for all the fighters. And I was like,
yay.
Holy shit, it was like a ray of sunshine shining down on me. Because, yes, I really do miss.
The sunshine!
I really miss the art of a well made manual.
It's a shame. I guess the other thing people bring up, games are cheaper to produce now. We're talking about technology of printing. I mean,
A CD is far cheaper than making a cart.
That is part of it. And plus the bulk they're doing it in, I can almost guarantee you that the bulk they're doing, say, for example, a GTA 5 in, I guarantee you per unit it's costing them a quarter. Since they're making millions of them.
Right.
And plus, at this point, they're buying all their parts directly, probably, and just doing it in the plant themselves, you know? So it's like, it's so. I know there's research and development and programs, but the actual physical cost is so low, it's ridiculous.
Sure.
All right. Next question. As I lost my Twitter tab.
You're a Wang.
I want to miss.
Maybe if you want a Wang.
What? What is yours and Egan's favorite Super Sentai Power Rangers seasons? Keep up the great podcast. Thanks. Well, I like the first ones because that was new to me, and I thought that I love Jason, the Red Ranger. All the camaraderie between them.
My favorite that I've seen so far is Bokinger. I love Bokinger. They're kind of like treasure hunters. Is their like gimmick? Is that they go hunting for treasures? Yeah, and it's.
I haven't seen that. I haven't seen a lot of them.
Well, that's the Japanese version. I can't remember what that turns in. What the American analogy of that one is. What they took the action footage from and turn it. But no, Bokinger is fantastic. I really, really like that one. And Geki Ranger, which was Power Rangers Jungle Fury, is also pretty good.
I think I stopped watching at Zio. That was like season 4, I think, technically. Or season... Yeah, there's three seasons of Mighty Morphin, then it went to Zio. So like fourth season. But I've been watching some... I watched them when Linkara does the History of Power Rangers. It was excellent. It's a really thorough examination of each season.
Nice.
Why was good, what was bad. And it turns out there were some good seasons. Like Space Rangers sounded excellent. Like actually,
yeah, Space Rangers is holy shit, I can't remember. Is that might be O Ranger? But yeah, that's that one is like kind having of. Like, if that's the one I think it is, it's really surreal.
Having like adult storylines in there and having like villains actually adapt to them.
It's fantastically fun TV to watch.
It's great. It's basically superheroes. That's why it's great.
Yeah.
This is from Mark Varley, who's now writing a column on the Punk Effect.
Well, thumbs up.
I forgot to bring it up. There's like 30 new contributors to the Punk Effect.
Woo!
We're going to get going, so check out the punkeffect.com, people. Or watch us on YouTube. It's a handy-dandy site. Movie news and gaming news and reviews every day.
I'm not on there.
You know, you could be, though. Anyway, this is from Mark Varley. What does the future hold for Wii U if Super Mario 3D World doesn't meet sales expectations? Well, I think it will.
I feel like Super Mario 3D World will meet sales expectations as long as Nintendo is basing their sales expectations on units of the Wii U sold. I don't think there's going to be any Wii U owner that does not own Super Mario 3D World.
Oh, yeah, because that's like... It's
the reason I want the system.
There hasn't been a must-have title in the first year.
Well, I kind of really want Wonderful 101, but yeah.
But, I mean, for the majority of people.
Sure,
There isn't the killer app, as Keith Robbins would say. This could be the first one.
They tried to push Pikmin 3 as it, and from all accounts, it's a very good game, but I just couldn't give a damn about
it. Too esoteric. Not enough mainstream appeal for a game like that.
But yeah, I don't think there's any real worry about Super Mario 3D World selling.
This is a flagship title. This is like, in a perfect world, if this could have came out with the system, like the same month, then there you go.
Right, and that's the problem. It really should have been available at or near launch.
Instead of just the side-scrolling.
Around, right, yeah. So it will meet their expectations. I don't know if it's going to move enough units to save the day. Like, move enough actual Wii U units.
It'll help. It won't hurt for the holidays, you know? It'd be
sure.
Okay. This is from Helen at Gara at My Desert. Pat Neen, what is your least favorite genre of game and why? Least favorite.
You know, well, I can always find exceptions, and the two that I'm going to mention now, I can definitely find exceptions to the rule, so I don't want it to be taken as I hate these genres, but I would say first-person shooters for the most part. And actually, I mentioned before, 3D beat-em-up action games. The modern 3D action game is just not something that I generally derive a lot of joy from.
I don't either. I just don't... It doesn't seem fun. It just seems repetitive. It just doesn't seem... It seems like every 20 minutes, okay, I did everything.
Right.
What is there to do? You know what I mean? I would say it's my least favorite... I don't know. I've never played an MMORPG, but this doesn't appeal to me.
MMO. Okay, so if we're allowed to count that, I could probably safely say that. Because I mean, I really like PSO, Phantasy Star Online, but that wasn't there was no MM part of that. It was
massive.
Yeah. because like I said, I can definitely find first person shooters I like.
I just don't like any game, maybe because I'm getting older now. I'm gonna be a million years old in 6 years. Again, I don't like games that you have to play it Tuesday at 8 o'clock. Beyond,
right?
That just doesn't appeal to me. I don't need that in my life. It just no.
Anything that requires a schedule,
yeah. Just
anything that requires you to keep up with your friends to maintain the same experience is not something that I generally enjoy.
And plus, I mean, at least with World of Warcraft, it just the graphics were terrible for that. I know you had to support all these people in it, but it just doesn't appeal to me to click the button and watch them attack a little.
I've never played it.
Plus my sister's ex-husband played a lot and he was in a clan, but whatever. I haven't had good experiences with just seeing how people were with it, but whatever. I'm sure there's people that play it and it doesn't control their lives, but a lot of people does.
No, Vani's the same way. She's completely turned off by that game because of how she saw it affect a number of people she knew. So, yeah, maybe MMOs. There hasn't been one that I've played that I've truly enjoyed.
Maple Story. Okay, Craig Goodwin. Are there any canceled games, consoles, peripherals that you wish were released?
You know, not to get back on the old Capcom horse, but I do kind of wish Mega Man Universe hadn't gotten canceled. I thought that looked very neat. I thought that looked very cool. Other than that, nothing is immediately springing to mind.
How about the Golgo 13 N64 game that was planned?
Sure.
It was. Which I didn't know about. If I would have bought an N64 just for that.
I'm sure you
would. Even though I was so far out of console gaming by then, it was all about computers. This is from at WB Stillwell, William. Favorite Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance games. I know nothing about the Game Boy Advance.
You are a loser. Game Boy Black and White, Kirby's Pinball. Game Boy Color, let's call it Dragon Warrior 3, the remake. And Game Boy Advance, let's say Metroid Zero Mission.
I gotta start playing some of those Game Boy games on the old Zippo.
For what it's worth, I think the Game Boy Black and White has, honestly, and I'm not kidding you here, one of the strongest libraries.
Really? How many games were there? About 500?
Yeah, I think. Maybe.
Not counting color.
There are so many pick-up-and-play gems in the Game Boy Black and White library.
Six years before the color came out. 95 the color came out.
The Turtles games, Balloon Kid.
Well, the older ones you're talking about?
Batman.
Batman was great.
Radar Mission. There's a ton that I really like on there. Hail Wrestling, which was actually part of the Fire Pro clan of wrestling games. I have a shoebox full of games, of black and white Game Boy games, and I've 45, and I've picked them so well. Oh, Jesus, Castlevania Belmont's Revenge is one of my favorite Castlevanias. I can reach into my box of about 45 black and white games and want to play anything that I pick out. I think it's just so good.
That's one of those things where I never had a Game Boy. I asked for one. I wasn't distraught. I never got one. I'm sure if I went after it, but I never got a Game Boy, so I never got into it that much as a kid. This is from at Jason Overturf. What's on the menu for the CU podcast? Is it worth staying up another hour? No, it's not worth staying up an hour for it.
If you did, you already know the answer.
This is from at C Jonathan 0329. Hey, Pat, when are you going to upload a new Flea Market Madness? Funny you should say that, Jonathan. I'm actually going to do volume 16 because since I work on the DVD soon, I'm not going to have much of a life the next month. I don't have time to do a full NES Punk episode. Depends if it's a short one. I'm going to do a Christmas one, though, as I usually do. But next week, I think, is reasonable for it. Next week. You'll see a Flea Market Madness 16. Yeah, I got off track with the. I should have released one probably a month ago, but you know, we had the little marathon thing, which takes over my life, too. This is from at Parappa Raptor. What are some games that listeners would be surprised that neither of you have played? That's a good question.
Games that we haven't played?
What are you surprised that neither of you played? I guess so. What a game you haven't played that people are surprised in me?
Honestly, I get a lot of like raised eyebrows with this one. I've never played Chrono Trigger.
Really?
I used to be a heavy RPG fan, and Chrono Trigger, I guess you could say I've turned on the DS version, but like I didn't play it. I'd like to, but that's one of those games that just completely missed me.
I have played Final Fantasy VII, but it was probably for like 10 minutes in like 98.
Jesus, you know, you're one of those people who's never actually played that to completion.
No, I never had a PlayStation, and it's gonna be tough for me to think of like what's the game that you were expected to play that everyone's played. That's where we have to start off with and go from there.
I would say things like Final Fantasy VII and Chrono
Trigger. But I played it. I didn't play through it, but I played it.
Yeah, I would say those fit the bill. I would say at this point through emulation, most people would assume that we've played Earthbound to some degree. I have.
I haven't played Earthbound.
That might be surprising. I wouldn't
call it that because that's a cult game. That's not like a hugely popular game, you know. So it's like,
yeah, but we're part of the cult.
No, this doesn't make a difference. It's like, what's a movie you haven't seen? I haven't seen E.T. So that's like a huge movie.
Then. Yeah.
So it's tough. It'd be like saying I never played Super Mario 3. That's what I'll think of that. Maybe I'll come back to that. This is from Jonathan Camacho. What happened to the Tecate beer? So that's what the next said.
That was recent. So I like Tecate. I do. I've explained that. But tonight, I decided to change it up. Tecate's not paying me to drink their beer. And until someone's paying me.
We should reach out.
Until someone's paying me to drink their beer, I'm going to drink what I feel like.
Sponsors, we're wearing t-shirts. We're wearing the mixed martial arts shorts with the logos on our asses. Exactly. At Slim Mirokujin, gentlemen. What is your take on the claim used game sales with current system? I guess, comma, does it hurt the game industry? I guess he means like how you can only you have to pay for it to get transferred to the game. Is that what he means?
The what?
Claim used game sales. I guess he means like what Xbox is trying to push where you couldn't sell your games without a fee or license.
I think he's just asking the age old, do used game sales hurt the developer?
Is that what it means with current?
Well, yeah, because the system you're describing wouldn't hurt the developer.
Okay. On the claim that used game sales hurts the game industry, I don't think it does at all.
I think it's bullshit, and here's why. Game developers forget that people have a finite supply of money and that video games cost $60 and that the money that is used by a place like GameStop or Luna Video Games or Target even is real money. They're always buying your games with real money to fill those orders, those pre-orders. The fact that those games are traded in for credit to get those games is still generating money for you because a place like Luna Video Games has to get those games in still and pay real money for them.
Sure.
Yes, you are losing out on a sale of something or another, but I can tell you as someone who works in a video game store, my distributor does not carry your fucking game after a month. They don't give a shit. Because it's not selling for them at a new price anymore. So, no, used games aren't hurting the developer. They're only helping enable customers to buy your new games.
At JSC315, have you ever gotten tired and just burned from games and need to take a break from it all?
Yeah, all the freaking time. All the time.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly don't play games even every day. It's kind of sad I don't play games almost every... I don't even play games even every week at this point.
I'm heavy in a reading spurt right now, where all I'm doing is just reading.
Gotta get in a writing spurt.
Yeah. Books and comics and not playing a whole lot of games.
At that Craig fellow, what's the most stupid / ignorant statement you've heard someone say / state about retro gaming / collecting that pissed you off? The most stupid ignorant statement you've heard someone say. That's a lot.
Well, I don't know if it's the stupidest or it's the most ignorant, but someone walked into Luna Video Games the one day when I was working with a friend, and I only think of it because we joked about it for months and months afterwards. This guy had a sloping forehead, and he had hedges under his armpits, and was wearing, you know, just a red wife beater, and, you know, I don't know, probably had some sort of MMA tattoo on his arm. I'm trying to remember what he had.
I think of Chuck Rock with the sloping forehead.
Yeah, it was basically a Chuck Rock.
Yeah.
And he walked in and looked at the N64 games, and he goes, "You guys got N64 games?" And I'm like, "Yep." He goes, "You got Mario Golf?" And I go, "Yep." He's like, "How much is it?" And I go, "I don't know, it's 10. It's $10. These games is old. I was like, "Yes, yep, those games are old, sir." He's like, "They're no good. These are old games." I'm like, "No good? Like what? Like rotten fruit? Like what are you trying to say? Like
it's old."
One of the most common misconceptions that I deal with, so it's not really a statement, but one of the things that drives me nuts is I get a lot of people who walk into the store and they look at a game and they go, $10 for a game or $15 for a game. That's ridiculous, because they thought they were the only person in the world who had woken up in the past 2 years and decided they wanted to play Super Metroid. And they were expecting this game to be a quarter, and they come in and they see the harsh reality of the fact that other people want to play this stuff, and they fucking lose their shit. And it's like, we would not be in business.
Why do they feel offended by that? That's like, why do they care?
I don't know, you know, so it's just, yeah, it's weird that they get all upset about it, and we wouldn't be in business if these things cost a quarter.
Well, what I think is one of the most ignorant statements about game collecting is that people think they're going to be worth what comic books are worth ever. It's not going to happen. Just not. 50 years from now, it's not going to happen. There's a significance, I bring up cultural significance to having a Spider-Man comic from 62. There's not going to be a cultural significance to having a Super Mario Brothers card even complete in box 50 years from now. It won't be the same thing. It will not be.
No. No, I think that is an area where I can agree with you on cultural significance. They're important, but it does not have the same spot in the cultural lexicon that something like a Spider-Man does. You're right.
This is from, again, JSC315, whose name is Karate Swedish. The Xbox One controller, the Xbox One controller could have possibly had smell-o-vision. Is that true? Do you think this could ever be a real thing in the future? No, smell-o-vision is never going to happen because it's too difficult to have. You have to have all these different chemicals at the disposal in order to mix them up and fire them out of your face. No, it's not happening. It'd be cool, but the best you're going to have is like Lucio Lagans had the sniffle-vision scratch-off cards.
Sure.
We have about 10 more questions. This one's going fast, but we're an hour and a half in. This is from at Jonathan Camacho, or CJ Jonathan 0329. Could Frank have a short session on the podcast? He doesn't want to come here over this late.
Nope.
This is from at Hoodoo456. Pat, what is your favorite NES racing game? Huh. I never honestly sat down and actually thought about that before.
Eliminator Boat Duel.
That's up there. Eliminator Boat Duel.
And I really like RC Pro.
You know what? Danny Sulva's Indy Heat. It's basically super off-road, but it's
good.
The races are more complex, and you upgrade your car. That's not a bad game. I was going to say, what's the one I was writing about? Was it Race America? That wasn't bad.
Micro Machines is fun, too.
Micro Machines, I kind of go back and forth if I like that or not. Yeah, there's a few. Rad Racer is still fun, the original. At Abe Randall.
Hi, John.
Recently bought a bootleg copy of Ninja Gaiden Trilogy. Uh-oh. What's your opinions of bootleg games for people not wanting expensive copies?
I look at it like the Famicom boots and Super Nintendo boots. If you know what you're getting, and you're never going to try to pass it off as the real thing...
Is it discernible from the real thing?
Right.
Is it different?
Can it
be full? Because here's the thing. People say, well, I'm buying a copy that looks exactly the same, but I'm not going to do anything with it. Yeah, what about the next person? What if you either lose it or sell it?
Nah.
You can trust the next person not to try to pawn off
as
real?
In this instance, just because I know this fellow on Twitter, it does not look anything like a real copy. I mean, like it's a classic Famicom-style bootleg with a shitty label that makes no sense.
I almost then would say, why don't you just spend the extra $50 to get a flash cart then?
The only thing I would say when you buy bootleg carts, you are generally dealing with inferior
parts
and makes. So as long as it works and it's good enough for you, then congrats, you have the game to play. But I'm real leery of anything bootleg, simply because as much as these cartridges, you know, Nintendo cartridges, real Super Nintendo Genesis cartridges almost never break, bootleg cartridges break all the time because they're just manufactured
crappy.
Like crap.
Yeah, okay. This is from at Confirmed Troll. Pat, what is your favorite Pokemon? Birdle Fudge. I don't know. I'm not really a Pokemon guy.
Sandshrew.
I honestly probably know three different. Who's the one with the... I had a stuffed animal one I found. The one with the twirly circle guy.
I'm not telling you.
That's my favorite one.
Poliwhirl.
He's my favorite one. I know only two others. I love Pokemon Snap. It's a fun game. This is from at NateWilcox23. Hi, Ian.
Hi.
People look at me like I'm crazy when I say I watched a show called Samurai Pizza Cats. Have you seen it? Oh, yeah, we both seen it.
Yeah, I have the Japanese language box set. I watch it all the time.
You know, the American one? Does it?
They didn't do an American one yet. It has subtitles. Legendary Ninja Cats. It's basically the same thing.
I thought it was well done. The humor was still in it for the. I mean,
it's Tatsunoko. I mean, there's a pedigree there. And the animation is awesome to look at. Like, if you like the character designs, all of the mecha animals are fantastically, like, drawn and well-realized.
And it broke the fourth wall. It was very funny with that.
I like that show quite a bit. So, yes, I don't think you're
good
crazy at all.
Good Famicom game, too.
And, yeah, great Famicom game. And the funny thing about the box that I have, all the DVDs are little pizzas.
Surprised it never came out in the U.S., even if the license wasn't big here. It would be a fun game to have.
It was cute and should have been fun enough.
Yeah. This is from at Seth GFP. How do you feel about the in quotes gamer stereotype stigma? I don't think we have one anymore. Being that gaming now, you see advertisers during football games, you know, in the Super Bowl. I don't know if there's a stigma anymore. I think it's the biggest industry. It's bigger than movies, you know.
I think we do. And I think what he's referring to is more the gamer as in I'm a gamer. I identify with that word gamer stereotype that is around, and it's...
Meaning that's how you identify yourself.
I feel like, yeah, and it's generally, at this point, it's kind of become a dirty or a bad word. It's really a topic for a larger talk.
All right, we can come back to it.
Yeah, I feel like...
You're saying that's how you identify yourself, as I'm a gamer.
And I feel like some of the stereotypes of people who go out of their way to identify themselves as gamers...
I think it's a larger conversation.
Well, it's brought upon... If you're going to identify with it, and there's stereotypes associated with it, and you're calling yourself it, you're bringing some of the stuff upon yourself. The stuff like being horrible on like a chat or something
that. Let's hold this for another topic. All right. This is a whole psychological discussion we can get into about this. Okay. This is from at JoFo22. Could I get a shout out for my friend Chris? He's one of your new contributors. Oh, hey, Chris.
Howdy, Chris.
Chris? Yeah, Chris is doing movie news and reviews on the site.
Hello.
Unless there's more than one Chris. And the fact that I need a spreadsheet, being if there's over 30 new contributors, it's tough. But Chris is starting a post up. He posts about they're actually doing a Dumb and Dumber sequel. With
they already did one.
But a real one. Like they're actually coming back.
That's unfortunate.
Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels. That's kind of weird.
Great.
It's been like 15 years.
That's awful.
You know. So that's a cold movie.
Paychecks.
At Street Dreamer 83, best Schwarzenegger movie, best Stallone movie. You first. I have mine. Well, I have at least one.
Commando, Demolition Man.
Schwarzenegger, Predator, not even close. Best Stallone movie. It's one my dad likes that I like that I haven't watched enough, but Nighthawks. Not one people have seen. They're basically New York detectives, and there's a terrorist cell going around New York City, and it's Stallone and Billy Dee Williams basically trying to stop it. And it's done in a serious way, though. It's not just an action movie. It's like a thriller, and it's a very interesting movie.
I would almost go back on Commando and say Predator because I love Predator, but
why do you say Commando?
Well, because Commando is a Schwarzenegger movie through and through.
But
Predator,
it's terrible.
Predator is a Predator movie.
But I look at it as just a movie that they were in, though.
Yeah,
it's still a Schwarzenegger movie. It's a fantastic.
Commando has Radon Chong.
You like Radon Chong? You like Radon Chong?
Sure.
Yeah. She's been naked at that. She was in Highlander the series. She was an immortal that was a pianist, and then not a
was
penis.
Pianist.
<It's> Unless you're into that sort of thing. She didn't have a penis.
Penises.
And then Duncan was watching her because some immortals have the ability to tell pre-immortals.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them do. You have to like harness that. And so he was following her, and she was a brilliant pianist.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but the problem was she was killed. Duncan was friends with an immortal he knew for like 500 years or 400 years. He was like a big theatrical guy, and he killed her to preserve her youth and her genius in the prime of her youth, which is a bad thing to do. You're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to kill a pre-immortal to have him come immortal. Just let it happen naturally, not happen at all. And at first she thought it was great, but then she didn't have the ability to play anymore, and Duncan theorized because maybe had something to do with the candle burns brightest, it dies out quicker. And so he ends up wanting to kill her, the one that made her immortal, because it's like, hey, your brilliance is gone, I'm going to kill you. And she almost wanted it to happen, and Duncan had to step in and save her. And it was an interesting episode. I love the Hanukkah series, but anyway, she was in it.
All right.
So
that's a brilliant penis.
Odd question from Retro Nomad. Where did you get those shelves for your NES collection? It's driving me mad. Find anything functional. These are Atlantic Oscar shelves. They make a bunch of different sizes. You can find them on Amazon or eBay. Shipping is a killer, but they're worth it. These are all adjustable. That's why these are so good. You can fit them for anything. The perfect shelves for these. A couple more questions. Actually, two more, it looks like. Then we can go and I can have some leftovers. This is from at Panzer Jedi. This one's for Ian.
Mm.
Ever have anyone try to sell you fake pirated games?
All the time. All the time. I get people who want to sell me. What's funny is I find it offensive, and I kind of call people out because I get a lot of hardcore gamer types who come in with like hardcore gamer games. You know, they want to sell
hardcore gamer games.
They want to sell me their RPGs and stuff like this, and they'll casually slip in like 4 bootleg Pokemon games that they must have gotten in off the internet. I'm like, this is bootleg trash. Get it out of the store. And
do you say it like that?
I have. Like, if I really think they're trying to get something over on me, I immediately tell them to take everything and get the fuck out because they know it's bootleg. I'm sorry, they don't play these types of games and then try to sell me 4 Pokemon games because they just don't want them and not know.
So these are like GBA games?
They've even gone so far as now there's bootleg Diamond and not Diamond, Heart Gold and Soul Silver Pokemon DS cartridges.
Really?
They make they're easy. I mean, the printing is like 2 DPI, and they're on they're on gray cards.
They're dot matrix printing.
Yeah, yeah. And the cards are like gray, like light gray. They're not even
trying.
Black.
GBA, no, they
they're
tried.
Not trying.
GBA, well,
no, with GBA, they didn't try. I mean, my funniest story about bootleg cards, and this person.
I thought GBA, they tried.
This person wasn't. I don't think this person was trying to pull it over on me. They really didn't seem to know what they had. They said they had had them for a while, but they had brought me. Maybe they did, but they brought me. Emerald, Sapphire, and Ruby, and they also brought me Fire Red and Leaf Green. Now, Fire Red and Leaf Green officially come in opaque cases colored to match their names.
Okay.
Emerald, Ruby, and Sapphire come in clear cases, or clearish cases, in the colors to match their names. Okay. A lot of bootlegs of those games will just come in gray cartridges, right?
Oh, so it's obvious.
With bad, you know, labels, 2 DPI, and, you know, the label affixed diagonally across, you know, overlapping into the pin connectors. But these ones, the labels were fixed fairly well. They were obviously fake, but whoever bootlegged them, the Fire Red and Leaf Green came in clear red and green cases, and the Emerald, Ruby, and Sapphire came in opaque red, blue, and green cases. So, like, they tried, but they still fucked up. Like, they still... Yeah.
All right.
But, so yes,
so
all
you,
the time
so you
gotta
get out
that.
Of the store. Huh? You say, get out with your...
I am not kind to the people I think are really trying to pull something on me.
And this is from at that Craig fellow. Favorite NES/Famicom cart art, or I guess cover art could be the same thing. That's hard to narrow down.
Oh, jeez.
Kung Fu Heroes is nice. Just looking at it.
Yeah, I always have actually said that Kung Fu Heroes is really nice.
It's simple.
Cover art. I like that a lot.
I'm sure I get this complete. It's nice.
Yeah, I almost bought it complete when it came to the store like a month ago just for the cover art.
You still have it?
No, it's gone. I would have bought it by now.
Boy, the manual.
By the time I make up my mind, it's usually gone.
It's tough. There's a lot of great art.
I really like, if you can find a picture of it online, the bootleg Jackal Famicom cartridge has great cover art.
Jackal?
It's like Dracula on a stagecoach with a flying skull over his head, and it makes no sense.
I'll find it for the YouTube upload.
It's humorous.
Pretty funny. How about Ghost Line, glam rock video?
Yeah.
And then that's about it.
All right.
For this podcast. So just to recap, Pat the Ace Punk Volume 3 is coming out. Yeah!
Yep.
It's going to be good. We'll be back in a couple weeks. We'll tell you our nice Thanksgiving tales. Go to thepunkeffect.com. There's literally 30 new contributors. I don't know how I signed them up last week. That's all I did last week. And we'll be at MAGFest.
I might have buttons.
Video games, you're going to... I found anybody... Video Game Years Part 82 Part 2. I don't know if you've seen it. Is out.
I did.
It's good. It's very good.
It's good.
Did you like the us in the plane?
Yeah, that was fantastic. That was pretty awesome. I'm like, is that my voice? And then I see the plane flying.
When I first saw that, I was like, who's talking? And then So check that out. Check out the site. New Flavor Market Madness next week. And we love you guys. We can watch us on YouTube, on thepunkeffect.com, or on iTunes.
Stitcher.
They love us there. And we're gonna keep this going until we can't keep it going no more.
What episode is this? I'm surprised we've made it this long.
I think this is 7. 6 or 7.
I think it's 6.
We started late August.
So, either way, it's...
So that's 3 months. That's like 6 or 7.
It's rather impressive for two assholes like us who can't commit to much, so...
Well, you can't commit to much. Geek versus geek. Yeah, that's gonna happen 3 years later.
Yeah.
I know. Alright, guys, we're signing out. We'll see you next time.
Bye.